It's Tuesday, the 29th of March, 2016. Happy birthday to Walt Frazier. Fantasy Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Belen Marrera. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like Belen Marrera, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be the sponsor of the podcast for one show. So thank you to Belen, thank you to everyone who has done that so far this season. Of course, you all know what's coming next. A big thank you to Moneyball.com.au, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. If you are looking to play some DFS contests, whether it's NBA, which I'm sure it is, Australian rules football, NRL rugby, A-League soccer, Premier League soccer, cricket, there's lots of stuff that happens on Moneyball for all the DFS contests. It is the best in the business. Make sure you're checking out Moneyball. As I mentioned, my name is Josh Lloyd, and if you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can do for every show, if you want to interact with the show or ask any questions or any clarifications, you can tweet at me, which is redrock_bball. You can see that Twitter handle below my hairy head on the screen, and you can tweet at me any questions you have at any time, of course, but you can interact live with the show if you are watching live, which I don't imagine. Today's a little bit of a later show. Not sure there's going to be that many people watching live, as most of you across in the States are tucked up nicely in your beds. Let's get straight into the action.
Let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night goes to Dwayne Wade of the Miami Heat. He played 32 minutes against the Brooklyn Nets. He had 30 points. He had 2 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks on a tremendous 14 of 19 shooting from the field. Makes a difference when Goran Dragic isn't there. Chris Bosh obviously isn't there as well. But Wade had the ball in his hands a lot more than 9 assists. You can see the defensive numbers, the scoring, everything was working for Wade today. And it was a situation we talked about yesterday when we're looking at Wade for, say, DFS action. Thought, well, Wade looks like he's in a good spot here. That was before we knew that Dragic was out. And once Dragic went down with that illness, you had to think that there was going to be some definitely more value for Wade. And he's had a pretty underrated season this year. He's played 67 games, and he's on track to play the most games he's played in the last 5 seasons. In fact, over the last 2 weeks, he's a top 40 player, which I don't imagine many people would have anticipated. In fact, you could have got him in the 70s or 80s in drafts. He's ranked 67th on the season. One of the big reasons why recently his ranking has gone up is his shooting. He's shooting 51% over the last couple of weeks, and that's the Wade from 2 or 3 years ago. It's not the Wade from now, so don't expect that to necessarily continue, nor would I be anticipating the 85% from the line to continue, because he hasn't finished a season in the last 6 years above 80% from the line. I'll have to venture a guess and don't think he really has at any other time, but he's a great source of assists. He's averaging close to 5 a game. Doesn't hit any threes. We know how many threes has he actually hit this year. That's a good question. 7. Jesus. That's pretty low. 7 threes for the season for Wade. He gets you a steal a game, solid rebounding, good scoring, really good field goal percentage as well for a shooting guard. And the last week he's given you a block a game as well, which used to be one of his real strengths as a shooting guard. In fact, he had a couple of seasons where he was over a block a game back in 10-11 and 11-12. So we know that he has had a reputation as one of the best shot blocking guards in NBA history. So Dwayne Wade is the monstrous line of the night. The waiver wire line of the night, this one is all circumstantial. It is Kyle Anderson of the San Antonio Spurs. He got another start with Kawhi Leonard out. He played big minutes, 36 minutes, and went 13-3-7. He had 1 3, he had 4 steals, he had a block, and he hit all 4 of his free throws and went 4 of 6 from the field. He's a guy that I've been talking about with Kawhi out, saying he's going to have a decent game, He projects as being a guy who will have really good fantasy value if he's ever in a situation where he gets to start. Now, obviously, stuck behind Kawhi Leonard is not a real great opportunity for him to get minutes, and it might take him moving on to a different team to find a bigger opportunity, but he does have a really nice fantasy game. His ability to get steals, assists, rebounds, score, hit that half a three a game, block shots at a good rate, and be a really good percentage guy. He can do quite a lot. In fact, like we see with so many rookies, he shot 35% from the field last year, 64% from the line. This year, 47% and 76%. It's not unusual to see rookies into their second year, take their field goal percentage up by 10, 15%. And he's another example of that. So when you see a rookie who shoots 35, 38%, God, Jesus Christ, this guy's terrible. He can't shoot. The next year, watch it jump by 10. Sometimes it doesn't, but a lot of the time, you will see that field goal percentage take a massive rise, and that also gives them more playing time and enables them to accumulate other numbers as well. So it can be a real big factor in rookies actually taking that big jump into their second year. And that's Anderson hasn't necessarily taken a bigger jump because his opportunity has been more limited, but he's actually being trusted in more situations, which he wouldn't have been last year. So when Leonard goes down, they're happy with putting Anderson in there and playing him 30 minutes. And even when Leonard plays, they'll play Kyle Anderson. They'll play him 18 minutes, 20 minutes as the primary backup at the three. And look, he looked interesting at Summer League when I saw him. He was the MVP there. He looked really good. He looks unathletic, of course, but he just gets shit done. He hits shots. He makes plays. He rebounds. He plays defense. He does it all without looking good. And in the end, all you really care about is the result. And that's exactly what Kyle Anderson does for you. The young gun of the night, one of the stable of Red Rock boys, Rod Hood, put up a massive game against the Lakers because, let's be honest, it's not hard to put up big games against the Lakers, especially when you're destroying them by 50, as the Jazz did. Rod had 30 points. He had 8 triples at halftime. He then proceeded to not take another shot for the rest of the game. He could have literally smashed the record for most threes in a game. He could have put up a 45, 50-point performance. He didn't have to. The Jazz had this game comfortably in hand, but 30 points, 8 triples, 3 assists, sorry, 3 rebounds, 1 block on 11 of 13 shooting. He has been significantly cold recently, but that's as good a game as you'll get from most players. He should be owned in all 12 team leagues, mostly. It's not necessarily a must own because, again, it depends on how your schedule's set up and at this time of year how everything's working out, but I own him in a 10-team league. I'm in championship round, and I've stuck with him because he fits exactly what I need to do. He's a guy who'll get me some threes, some nice assist numbers. He'll be a great free throw shooter, and that's exactly what you get from Rod. He's an 87% free throw shooter on the season, and another one of those guys who's taken his free throw percentage up by 11% this season. So, look, the field goal percentage has only gone up by 1%, not as big a jump, but he's taking his free throws up, and he's doing a lot of other things this season. So, Rod Hood, he's one of the best young wings in the game. A lot of people do underrate what he can do, and he has been a little bit quiet over the last 2 to 3 weeks, but this is hopefully it's exactly what he needs to really finish off the season strong and push Utah into the playoffs. So Rod Hood, your young gun of the night. The dud of the night, we're going to stick with the Utah and Lakers game. Who do I give it to? It's there's three really standout options here on the Lakers. We've got D'Angelo Russell, got Julius Randle, Kobe Bryant. They were all absolutely pitiful. I'm going with Randle, who had 2 points, 1 rebound in 24 minutes. He was 1 of 5 from the field. He didn't have a steal, a block, an assist, or a three. It's just terrible. And talked about him the other day, and he was starting to put together some good numbers, and looking like a top 50 guy in this stretch here. And I was very much like, I don't believe that he's a top 50 guy moving forward. I don't think he's ever going to be a great fantasy player or a great NBA player. And stinkers like this are part of the reason. There was an interesting thread on the NBA Fantasy B-Ball subreddit today talking about which guys do you think will jump up next season and have a much higher ADP than what they had this year. And someone put on there, I think that D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle will go between rounds 2 and 4. I did post a comment to that. I couldn't let that slide. I said, I think that might be a tad too early. That was posted before this game. And yeah, if you're taking Julius Randle in round 4, I'm pretty sure you're losing your draft because he's just not that guy. And I think if the Lakers get more talent in, which they should, assuming they get a draft pick, then his role will actually decrease from what it is this year. And I don't believe in him. I just don't think that he is going to be a great player. His season's been good. 10 rebounds a game. But literally, that's the only positive thing he's contributed this year. Nothing else. He's below averaging points, threes, assists, steals, blocks, field goals, and free throw percentage. That's a one-category player. Yes, 10 rebounds is very good, and he's a very aggressive rebounder. And what he has done over the last 2 weeks, he's giving you 3 assists a game, and he can distribute the ball. But he's not going to be a shot blocker. He's not a stealer. He's not hitting threes. He's not a big scorer at this point, and his percentages are subpar. The field goal percentage has improved, so that's one thing. Yeah, he's at 49% over the last 2 months. So that's an improvement. Clearly, when he's only at 44 on the season, and he will get better at that, and he might hover around 50, but his ceiling to me is not, it's not top 50, or if it is top 50, it's between 45 and 50. That's sort of where I see him fit. Not a good spot here. The Lakers, as I touched on yesterday, have got a horrific schedule this week, so Russell, Randall, Clarkson, none of those guys, Bryant, none of those guys are must hold with only two more games left this week, with shit performances coming out the wazoo from them and a terribly tough opponents for them to play. It's not a good idea to necessarily hold any of your Lakers guys, really. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup from Monday's games. At point guard, Jeffy Teague, 47.7, and JJ Barea, even though he went back to the bench, he put up 38.7 in this game. He has been playing sensationally over the last month, either in a backup role or a starter's role. It hasn't really mattered. The shooting guards, Dwayne Wade, 49.9, Rod Hood, 35.6. We've touched on both those guys already. The small forwards, Kev Durant, 58.6, just smashing at the moment. And Andrew Wiggins, 48 points. He's not a guy that I'm very keen on in DFS, but that's a huge performance from him. Helps when you're playing a team who's really, really poor. And I think I did mention that yesterday, that he does have an opportunity against the Suns team that's just disgusting for him to put up numbers, and he came through. LaMarcus Aldridge also came through, with the Spurs sitting basically six rotation guys, 54.1 for Aldridge. Willie Cauley-Stein, 33.8, another big performance. I haven't seen any quotes from George Karl whether he's downplaying Cauley-Stein's ability again, but with a big game from Cauley-Stein, another big game from Seth Curry, George Karl looks more and more like an absolute dick every single day. Karl Anthony Towns at center, 49.5. This guy is just an absolute machine. There is zero chance he gets out of the first round next year. Zero. If you're in a league and he does not get drafted in the first round, I'm fairly confident that you're going to win it, because he has to go in the first round. I can't see any way around it. The total there is 415.9. You would be pretty impressed if you got that sort of lineup, and it wasn't overly tough to do. Like, yeah, Jeff Teague, you play the Bulls. I touched on that yesterday. It's always a good opportunity. Barea had a good spot. Wade had a great spot. Hood against the Lakers, his form hadn't been great, but you're playing the Lakers. Our projections loved him. Durant, of course. Wiggins against the Suns, always in play. Aldridge with everyone out. To expect 50 out of him is probably not you probably don't expect that, but you could have done it. Cauley-Stein was in a great spot with Boogie out, and then Towns, of course. So I reckon someone would have had that perfect lineup. I wouldn't have been shocked if we actually saw someone drop that perfect lineup. So let me know if you did see anyone with that in any of the GPPs on FanDuel, or any of the cash games, or anything like that. We are going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be back to go through these 10 games from Monday in a little bit more detail. All right, guys, we're back. Bring this up on the screen for you guys watching along live. You can see the way that we format our box scores over at Basketball Monster as I share these live on the video. And you can go along as we go through the box scores that we're doing. The first game was the Brooklyn Nets and the Miami Heat. Thad Young, who'd been a little bit disappointing lately, he went 10 of 12 from the field for 20 points, 9 rebounds, 3 steals and a block. Obviously, he has to be owned, especially with a 5-game week for the Nets. So a good start there. Brookie Lopez went 26 and 4 with a block as well. And Shane Larkin, only 7 points. You're not owning Shane Larkin to get points. And Daniel Charles just chimes in about FanDuel. 400 was the highest he saw. Well, yeah, that's still a pretty good score. Larkin, 7 points, 29 minutes, but 3 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals. That's what I like seeing from him. He should hold this starting job and have 25, 27 plus minutes most of the way. With 4 more games this week, I think that you really do have to look at owning Shane Larkin, because the assist numbers you're going to get, the steal numbers you're going to get are going to be really nice. The points won't be great, but with 4 more games, that might make up for itself. And he can have some nights where he goes for 15 or 16 points, and that's not completely outside the scope of what he can do. Sean Kilpatrick, 21 minutes again, 14 points. That's what he does. He will score. He'll do nothing else, but he'll score. And if you need points, again, a great option. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, he went from 16 minutes to 20 minutes. His production didn't really extrapolate the same way. 2 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. He's a great stream for rebounds. He's a great stream for steals, actually. He's a solid rebounds guy, but I do not think that he is a standard league guy at this point in his recovery. Boyan Bogdanovic, not a great night. 9 points in 24 minutes, while Sergei Karasev went 3-2-2 in his 18 minutes, and those guys are a little bit up and down with the sort of playing time that they get. Donald Sloan, 2-1-3 in 19 minutes. Obviously, he can be cast aside except for the deeper formats, and Henry Sims went 4-6 in his 13 minutes. On to the Heat. Goran Dragic was out, so the captain of the Red Rock boys, Josh Richardson, played 38 minutes and doesn't miss. Just does not miss at all. Well, he does, but 6 of 9 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, and this is the key with him, is it's not about hot shooting. Yes, it's about hot shooting because it's been fantastic in the scoring and the threes and all that is great, but he does everything. He will assist. He will get rebounds. He gets steals. He gets blocks. So if for some reason, which apparently at the moment it will never happen, if he's going to have a cold night, which again, hell's freezing over apparently before he has a cold night, but he can do the other stuff. He'll get steals. He'll get blocks. He'll get rebounds. He gets assists. I just wish I was more aggressive on Josh Richardson in the Red Rock Dynasty League draft because I was big on him in the offseason and I thought that he could have a role. And Jesus, he looks super impressive. You would have to think that he is in consideration for the All-Rookie second team come the end of the year. I haven't really sat down and looked at who the top 10 rookies are going to be. But the way that he's playing the second half of the year, he has to be in consideration at least. Interesting to hear what you guys think. Do you think that Josh Richardson gets into one of the All-Rookie teams? He has been marvelous. Hassan Whiteside was also marvelous. 27-8, a steal and a block. Super percentages. He is just dominating at the moment. And Lu Deng went 9-5 in his 31 minutes. A 3, 2 steals. Still need to hold on to him. That's not a great night. Well, Joey Johnson also did not take advantage of the revenge game situation. 2 points. 4 rebounds and 7 assists. So you still love the 7 assists, but his shot wasn't falling. I still think that he's a guy that you hold on to, but you don't hold on to him all that tightly. Justice Winslow, 32 minutes for him, 13-3 with a triple on 5 of 10 shooting. He is obviously just a deeper league guy, and Richardson is a clear fantasy option above Winslow. Not sure if that will always be the case throughout their career, but at this point, his game is definitely tending more towards fantasy relevance than what Winslow's is. Joshua McRoberts played 17 minutes with Dragic out. He went 4-1-4, and we don't need to get overly interested in what he's able to do. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Toronto Raptors, the Thunder, a big victory. Kev Durant, 34-8-8, a steal, a block, 3 triples. Ho-hum, this is what he does. Well, speaking of ho-hum, Russ Westbrook, another triple-double, 26-11-12, with a 3, with a steal. These guys are both amazing. That was amazing as well, is if you did happen to hold on to Serge Ibaka, you're getting some return now. 15-8, a 3, 2 blocks in 33 minutes. That's 2 or 3 good games in a row from Ibaka. They're not great, but they're enough where you look at it and go, okay, then now he's providing for me. Now he's doing what I need him to do, and it's working out. Deion Waiters with another solid game. 15 points in 28 minutes, 3 triples, 3 assists, 3 steals. 6 of 10 shooting. I play zero trust in Waiters as a guy I'd want to own. He's a stream option. He can get assists. He can get steals. That's where his value comes, and he can be a points guy, obviously. Steve Adams went 10-9 with a block. Yep, solid center. Enes Kanter, probably one of the quieter nights he's had in about the last 3 weeks. 7-9 for Kanter in less than 20 minutes. Still had a steal, and his shot wasn't quite falling, going only 2 of 6. If he does his normal 4 of 6, we're looking at an 11-9, almost another double-double, and it's still exactly what you want him to do. Just not quite there today. Robertson played 25 minutes, 9-4. Campaign, dealing with a sore foot apparently, was in a walking boot before the game. He had 0 points in his 3 minutes. He's obviously not a fantasy factor as long as Randy Foy continues to steal his minutes. Foy only played 14 minutes, though, so that's a start. 0 points, which is pretty much par for the course for Randy Foy these times. The Toronto Raptors, Terrence Ross was out again. So we're talking about the Red Rock, my boy team. Normie Powell, another start, 28 minutes, 18 points, 4 threes, 4 rebounds, and 2 blocks. When Ross is out and Powell's getting 30 minutes, he has been great. Now, we don't know how long Ross is going to be out, but if the next time the Raptors play and we see that Ross is out and you're looking for someone who's going to score and potentially hit you some threes, then in a 14-team league, absolutely I'm looking at Powell. In a 12-team league, maybe I'd stream him in for one day because he's putting up numbers. And I've maintained it all season. I think that if DeMar DeRozan happens to leave, which I think is a very, very long shot, Powell could slot in and be a starter and be someone who, you know, does some good things for this team. I really do think that he can be a decent player, and he's showing it now. It's taken a little bit of time to come along, but he's showing it now. I think that the time that you'd want to target Powell would be Saturday, but the problem is there that they play the Spurs. It's a light scheduled day. You might be able to add him if Ross is out, but Ross is probably back by then. So for now, he just remains a DFS option as long as Ross is out. Pat went back to 29 minutes. He had one of his best games as well. 13-3, a steal, 2 blocks, and 2 triples. Too unreliable for standard formats. DeMar DeRozan, 19-2-5, and Kyle Lowry, his shooting is absolutely horrific at the moment. 4 of 14 from the field, 14 points. He had 2 threes. He had 2 rebounds. He had 4 assists. He's dealing with some elbow issues as well. It doesn't appear to be too serious, but 4 of 8 from the field, from the line, and 4 turnovers. Not the best night from Lowry at all. Jonas Valanciunas, just a 10-10 double-double, so the very bare minimum there. 27 minutes, no other stats. Not a good night, but not a terrible one. And Luis Scola chucked up a donut in his 15 minutes. He had 2 steals and a block with no points. Corey Joseph continues to get minutes, continues to do stuff on the court, but it doesn't help us from a fantasy point of view. 7-3-4 for Joseph in his 26 minutes. This game, as I said, was a blowout, so Bebe Noguera, DeLon Wright both got onto the court. No Bruno, though. The New York Knicks and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans trotted out a horrific starting lineup and somehow got the victory. Let's start with the Knicks.
Porzingis.
Yes. Kristaps, 35 minutes, 16-10. He had 2 threes, 2 steals, 3 blocks. That is a tremendous performance from Porzingis. That slump, again, how many times has it been brought up that Porzingis is hitting the rookie wall? And how many times has he just smashed through it with his massive Latvian forehead? He does not care for your rookie walls. He will smash through it. He will do it multiple times, and I've gone on plenty of rants for you to know my opinion on that, but he looks good again. Jose Calderon, 30 minutes, back to 30 minutes, of course. 9-7-6, 2 steals and 3 threes. One of the best championship week pickups, I think, that you can make, or even throughout the playoffs, because he's getting these inexplicable minutes. He's putting up stats, and he's not getting picked up. They have the Mavericks on Wednesday. They have the Nets on Friday. So you've got some pretty tasty matchups as well for point guard. So you might not fit him into your active roster on those busy days, but Calderon putting up numbers. Rob Lopez against his former team, 17-5 with 2 blocks. Pretty nice performance there. And Mallow went 22-5-6 with 4 triples. Aaron Aflalo, please don't own him. 5 points in 28 minutes. Jerry and Grant played 10 minutes. Yeah, why not? And Langston Galloway, 8-2-4 with 4 steals in his 22 minutes. Not much else to talk about on the Knicks. It's embarrassing to get beaten by a starting lineup that consists of Jrue Holiday, Luke Babbitt, Dante Cunningham, Alexey Ajinsa, and Omer Asik. How bad Omer Asik is the Pelicans starting guys like that, and he can play just 8 minutes. He is horrible. Holiday looked great. He looked awesome. He was back, and I felt bad about some people saying, is Jrue going to play? I'm not sure he plays one game. You might need to drop him. He comes out and went, oh, shit. 22-6-6, 2 triples, 4 steals, and then got smashed in the face and copped an elbow to the eye. It was blood coming out of his eye. Could not remain in the game. They're doing some x-rays on his orbital region to check exactly what's going on. It does not bode well for Jrue moving forward. He is absolutely not someone you just drop, but let's keep an ear out for the information that comes out and to see what they say. But with a team that is brutal like this, where they're not going anywhere, if Holiday's got any sort of concerns, he's not going to come back sporting a mask, I wouldn't have thought, to play out the last 10 games of the season. This could very well be the last we see of Jrue Holiday. It very well could not be. But there's a big opportunity here that he doesn't play again. Obviously, if he is out, Timmy Frazier and Tone Douglas take up the mantle. Frazier played 23 minutes. He wasn't good. 4-6-2 with 2 steals, but he's been better than that on most nights. And Norris Cole, hopefully we don't see him again this season, but they just keep listing him as questionable, so you obviously have to drop him. It just makes it hard to know what to do with Douglas and guys like Cole and Jordy Hamilton as well. Douglas had 16-5-2 with 2 triples. They don't feel as confident with Douglas because he'll play 29 one night, he'll play 21 the next night. He's a bit up and down, whereas Frazier, when Holiday was out, was 28-28-28. Basically every night. So I'd feel more comfortable in looking at him. Jordy Hamilton, 5-4 with 2 steals and a block. I like Hamilton. He needs more than 19 minutes, though, to be really relevant. In a deep league, sure, with Cole and Holiday, might not see any more action this week, but he's not going to be a standard league player. Lukey Babbitt, 24 minutes, 14 and 4 with two triples. You probably wouldn't be adding him. Dante Cunningham takes 40 minutes to score 12 points. He's not an option. And Alonzo G, he got injured in this one as well, a quad issue. Only played 20 minutes, 9 and 2 with two steals. So if for some reason you're holding on to Alonzo G, probably make the move. I like that Alexey Ajinsa played 26 minutes. He went 12 and 6 with a block. He is probably a 14-team league guy, just because of the uncertainty with what Gentry does with his minutes. But I do like his ability to produce when he gets on the court. While Kendrick Perkins had 3 and 8 in his 21 minutes, he is obviously not a fantasy option. The Atlanta Hawks and the Chicago Bulls. Let's start with the Hawks, who got the victory against the Bulls. It was a close game, actually, but didn't stop the Hawks guys piling up the stats. Jeffy Teague, 26, 6, and 7. A steal, a block, 30 minutes. You're going to hear me say this a lot. This is what happens when you're a point guard and you play the Bulls. You get big numbers. 8 of 8 from the line, 9 of 18 from the field. Paul Millsap played 35 minutes, went 11 and 11. He had a 3, he had a steal, he had 6 blocks and 3 assists. Big game. That's what happens when you're a big man and you play the Bulls. Kyle Korver, who's been really poor lately, he played 29 minutes. He had 12 points, including 2 threes. Had 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and a block, well above what he's been doing recently. That's what happens when you're a wing and you play the Bulls. Al Horford played 34 minutes. He went 14 and 10, a nice double-double, 3 assists, a block, a nice 6 of 11 shooting night. Probably not his best game, but definitely not terrible. That's what happens when you play the Bulls. Dennis Schröder chimed in 14 points in 18 minutes. Yeah, pretty good rate of shooting there. 6 of 10 from the field. Awesome. I don't do anything with Schröder. Tell what the biggest thing to me is about. You've heard me go on about Kent Bazemore plenty of times this season. But Kent Bazemore, if you're playing the Bulls and you still can't put together a performance, then I know that you're trash. 5 and 4 with 2 assists, 2 steals and a block. Which, you know what? 2 steals and a block? I'm okay with that. But the other stuff's bad. 1 of 9 from the field. 3 of 4 from the free throw line. He is just not a good player. He is just not a good shooter. And he has lost plenty of playing time to Thabo Sefolosha and Tim Hardaway. And to be honest, he's probably cost himself $5 million a year. He'd probably still get $10 million a year in the offseason. But he could have been a $15 million a year guy. And I won't say he's cost himself, because this is actually who he is. Not that inflated version of an all-star, whatever the hell was going on with him to start the year. Chrissy Humphries went 9 and 6 in his 14 minutes, and Tim Hardaway's back on a cold streak, 1 of 8 for 2 points in his 18 minutes. Thabo was also not good. He did not take a shot, Thabo, in 23 minutes, 2 and 2. Not a great night, but he had been pretty solid. Neither of those guys, Hardaway, Bazemore, or Sefolosha, are 12-team guys. On to the Bulls. Derrick Rose, 25 and 5, 2 steals, 2 threes, 1 block, 8 of 25 shooting. That's what brings him down, but a good night otherwise. But you know what? He was actually the best of the Bulls starting shooting guards, because Jim Butler, 15, 9, and 4 with 2 triples on 5 of 16 shooting. Jim Butler looks terrible at the moment, absolutely terrible. His knee is obviously a concern, despite the protestations of Bulls, of him, basically, a few days ago. No, I'm fine, I'm going to just get my rust out. No, you're not getting your rust out. You're injured, you're playing injured. The Bulls have mismanaged the injury again. You're mismanaging it, but they aren't being fierce enough to say, you know what, Jim, just sit down, because you're going to hurt yourself. If he doesn't go in for surgery, I don't know what I'll do, but I'll do something realistic. If he does not have surgery, I will be astounded. They are ruining his knee. That is my impassioned Chicago Bulls fan talking about how bad this medical staff is. Taj Gibson looked good, 9 and 12 with 4 blocks, 31 minutes, and Powell's minutes restriction appears to be over, 19, 11 and 5 with a steal on 8 of 18 shooting. Aaron Brooks turned in a game as well, 16, 4, and 6 with 2 threes, but you can pretty much not trust that at all. Nor can you trust Nikola Mirotic, who went 5, 3, and 2 in 17 minutes. Or more appropriately, you can't trust Fred Hoiberg to play Nikola Mirotic. But if you own him, and there's 4 games left this week, I think you have to hold Dougie McDermott. When Doug McDermott's only ability in fantasy is getting you points and he scores 1, that is not ideal. 20 minutes, 1 point. Again, 4 more games, I think you have to persevere to see at least what happens in the next one. And Bob Portis went 8 and 6 in his 14 minutes. Etuan Moore appears like he will be back on the weekend, so that'll allow Aaron Brooks to play a few more decent games this week. The San Antonio Spurs and the Memphis Grizzlies. No Ginobili, no Parker, no Duncan, no Leonard, and then David West sat out as well. So five, I said six before, I think five guys out of the rotation. LaMarcus Aldridge, 31 and 13, three assists, two blocks, insane percentages, 11 of 16 from the field, 9 of 11 from the free throw line. That's two massive games for him when everyone's been sitting out. Huge performance. Patty Mills also had a big game. Now, he only played 22 minutes. They started Andre Miller over him, but he was on fire. He went 7 of 10 for 17 points with 3 threes and 4 assists, while Miller went 8, 1 and 4 in his 28 minutes. Obviously, when Parker returns, Mills goes back to that deeper league guy, and Miller goes back to playing 3 minutes. Boban started. Marjanovic got 30 minutes. He had 5 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists and a block. Big minutes. Production, obviously, not quite there, but you would have been okay if you added him getting those 9 rebounds and a block. And Boris Diaw went 13 and 6. Danny Green, this is a production from Danny Green, actually 6 points, but 7 boards, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. Really tough to own him in standard leagues at this point of the season, as it's been for majority of the year, to be honest. Kev Martin, 1 point in 22 minutes. He's not even a shell of himself. I don't know what he is, but he is just really bad now. The Grizzlies, Matty Barnes, 30 minutes. 11, 9, and 3, 2 steals and a 3. Jermichael Green with Zach Randolph out again. 12, 5, and 3 with a steal and a 3. I don't think we're going to see as bigger numbers from Green as what we saw the first time that Randolph was out with that knee injury, but he'll still be solid. He just won't be getting 36 minutes a night because there's other guys there now. There's Andrew Martin is going to play. Ryan Hollins is going to get some more minutes. The Birdman's back. It's not going to be just Green playing, or not Green, yeah, Green playing 36 minutes. Now, speaking of Birdman, 24 minutes, 5 and 5 with 2 steals and a block. He's a block stream guy at this point. Jordan Farmer got another start. He wasn't great, but 9, 3 and 2 is okay. Ray McCallum actually outplayed him in terms of minutes off the bench, 10, 1 and 4 in 27 minutes. And Lance Stephenson, he's just not good. 4, 4 and 3 for Lance in 21 minutes. He has dropped off significantly. The fact that they had to sign Farmer to start taking the ball out of Stevenson's hands is a sign that I don't think Memphis is a massive fan. They are cutting his minutes pretty much every game, and he is not a must hold in 12 team leagues to me. He will go out no doubt and have a 30 point triple double in the next game, but I don't think that you need to keep holding on to Lance. Xavier Munford, 5 points in 6 minutes, not sure why I even mentioned him. And Vince Carter had 14 and 3 with 2 triples in 21 minutes. The Phoenix Suns and the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Suns, Brandon Knight. Massive game. I had Brandon Knight and Rod Hood on one team, so I got 15 threes and 60 points out of them. So I was absolutely ecstatic with that. 30 points for Knight, 7 triples, 2 rebounds, 5 assists and a block. And he went 10 of 16 from the field. So a huge performance from Knight. His backcourt mate, Devin Booker, 30 points as well. 2 triples, 3 rebounds, 5 assists. He took 22 shots and hit 10 of them. The thing that I worry about with Booker for next season is I don't think he's going to be able to get this many shots with Bledsoe around, and the Suns adding a very high lottery pick most likely. That, as good as he is and as good as he has been, I just feel that this could be not peak Booker, because he will get better than this, absolutely, but he's in a real great opportunity to just do everything, to play 43 minutes like he did here, to jack up 22 shots, and it's working out well for him. Ronnie Price, 12 points with 4 steals and 3 assists. He's as good a steal stream guy as there is in the league. He doesn't do much else for that. And finally, Alex Len played big minutes. He played 37. They played him through foul trouble, even with Tyson Chandler back. 14 and 13 with 3 steals for Len. He had 5 fouls. He had struggled to get over 30 minutes at about the last 5 or 6 games. And when he plays 30 minutes, the numbers are pretty good. The problem is that we haven't been able to rely upon him to do that. Not saying that you need to go and run to grab him, though. Now, John Lua played. He went back to 11 minutes with everyone healthy, which is fine. And Tyson Chandler went 2, 3, and 4 in his 19 minutes. PJ Tucker was also limited here. He only played 28 minutes due to fouls, 6 and 6 with a couple of assists. So obviously not what you would have hoped if you did happen to add PJ Tucker. On to the Timberwolves. Karl Anthony Towns is he's pretty good. My words are escaping me. 27 and 10, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 triple. Hit all 6 of his free throws. He went 10 of 18 from the field. I don't think there's much that this guy can't do. He is putting up insane numbers. He is a top 10 player over the last 2 months, over the last month, over the last 2 weeks, over the last week. He's ranked inside the top 20 for the season. We've got him. If you look at our rest of season projections, he's ranked fifth, and I reckon you're going to see him in that 5 to 10 range next year. He is over the last 2 months. Sorry, let's try again. Over the last 3 months, he is averaging 20 and 11 with 2.5 assists, 1.6 blocks on 56 and 80. You shouldn't need me to tell you how good he is. And once he gets his 3-point percentage up from 34 to, if he gets it to 36 or 37, and starts dishing 3 assists a game, which he definitely can, this guy is going to be the top fantasy basketball player within the next 5 years. He is incredible, and you got to sit down and actually realize how rare it is for a rookie to finish this high. I do not think a rookie has finished this high in the last 20 years in terms of fantasy ranks. It just doesn't happen. Maybe you have to go back to Chris Paul, but I'm not sure he finished inside the top 20. He's putting together some super, super numbers. Andy Wiggins. Wigo went 32-5-2. He hit 3 triples. He had a steal. He had 3 blocks. And he went 17 of 21 from the free throw line, which is obviously massive. That is a huge bump to that category. The 3 blocks is awesome as well. So a big night there. Rick Rubio continues to score. 17, 7, and 11. 3 steals, 2 threes. Another 40% shooting line, which for him is a massive win. Just doing everything. And Gorgui Dieng, not a great night, but 11 and 9 with 2 steals is okay. And Zach LaVine. LaVine's basically a scorer at this point. He's a 15 points here, a triple, but 1 rebound, 1 assist, and that's sort of what he does. It limits his usefulness in DFS because he'll score, but he does nothing else to get those other numbers up. And in a standard league, I think you probably still want to own him. It just, you know, if you're not looking for points, then what else is he giving you? He's not doing much else. The bench, putrid as per usual. Shabazz Muhammad had 10 and 5, which is one of his better performances recently. But yeah, not much interest in those bench guys. The Lakers and the Utah Jazz, I do not want to really cover the Lakers all that much here, except Roy Hibbert had 4 blocks. He went 8 and 6 in 24 minutes, but otherwise it was a shit show. Jordan Clarkson, 12, 8 and 2 with 2 steals, but he had 5 of 18 shots. Russell, 5, 2 and 1. Kobe, 5, 0 and 2 on 1 of 11 shooting. Russell went 2 of 11. Just horrible, horrible, horrible play from Russell, Randle and Bryant, and they didn't get beaten. They got dismantled by the Utah Jazz. And it's always funny to read Magic Johnson tweets after the Lakers lose because he just loves regurgitating very straightforward information. I didn't think the Lakers last year were the worst in franchise history. This team will be worse. Thanks, Magic. They're just bad. There is no one on this team that you need to hold in a standard league. For the Jazz, Shelvin Mack played 29 minutes. He went 17, 3, and 5, and he was a plus 48 in this game, which is almost the NBA record. I believe the record was plus 52, and that was tweeted at me by FatStat, at Fat_Stat. The record is plus 52. He was plus 49, the third highest ever. Some pretty important numbers there from Mack. You've got to keep holding him, but he has been regressing. Gordie Haywood only needed 22 minutes to go 11, 3, and 6 with 2 steals. Favors went 14 and 9. And Rudy Gobert in 28 minutes, 8 points, but 19 boards, 4 assists, and 2 steals. Huge night for Gobert. Trey Lyles, another big performance, 11, 8, and 3 with 3 threes. If you listen or read any Utah Jazz stuff or listen to any Utah Jazz podcasts, they rave about this guy. They think this guy is going to be something special. Now, where he fits on this team, I'm not really sure. But they love this guy in Utah. They think that he can. The other guy, they really love Rod Hood. And you heard me talk to Joe Ingles about that during the All-Star break, how much they love Hood. But Lyles, they think, is going to be something absolutely special as well. So interesting to see how he develops over the next 3 or 4 seasons. Trevor Booker also had 17 and 5 in his 16 minutes. The Dallas Mavericks and the Denver Nuggets the next game. As I mentioned, JJ Barea went to the bench. The Mavs went for a different starting lineup here, and Salah Mejri completely out of the rotation now. So that lasted 2 games. This would have been a great opportunity for him, but he was demoted from the starting lineup. They moved Dwight Powell into the starting lineup, and Powell looked great. 16 and 7 with 2 steals and a block. Center is his position. He's an undersized guy. And he was a guy that I was very interested in the offseason. If Dirk was going to struggle, I thought he'd move in and start in place of Dirk. But he had some struggles to start the year. If you're looking for a big man, I have no issue with adding Powell and seeing how it plays out. That's 2 solid games in a row from him. 16, 7, 2, and 1 is pretty good numbers. Nice percentages. He can hit threes as well. So he's a guy to look at. Obviously, Mejri is done. And David Lee played 4 minutes. And I am completely behind that. 0 points with 2 rebounds for Lee. I was at pains to point out that the numbers that David Lee was putting up when he arrived in Dallas were the biggest mirage we have seen in the last 5 years. Everything he was doing made no sense. And at some point, Carlisle would realize that, you know what, this guy's hurting our team. And it's sort of coming to that now. He's barely getting over 14 minutes a night. 4 minutes here is terrible. There is no point. He's owned in 57% of leagues. And I'm assuming those 57% of people are out of their playoffs because he should not be owned in that many leagues. Zaza Pachulia getting some minutes back. 29 minutes, 5-5. I'm not going to be going and adding him though. Justin Anderson also started and put together a very, very complete line. 11-4-2, a 3, a steal, and 2 blocks. He can do it all. And I think I touched on him yesterday saying that he can do quite a bit. It's just going to revolve around his playing time. Now, I don't feel confident that he's going to be able to get 30 minutes a night. So he's going to be more of a 14 to 16 team league guy. But he is, if he gets to 30 minutes, then yeah, he'll sneak into 12ers. JJ Barea off the bench, 18 points, 1 rebound, 11 assists, 3 threes, and 2 steals. Darren Williams, the situation looks worse than what we first thought. He might be out for a longer period of time, so Barea's a fine add, as is Ray Felton, who went 11-5-5 with a steal and a 3 in 32 minutes as the starter. Wes Matthews hit another 4 threes. He had 14 points, a steal, and a block, so a nice night there. And Devin Harris, probably his best game of the season, I'd say. 29 minutes, 12-3-3, 2 threes, 3 steals, 1 block. Really solid production, but I don't buy into Harris. He's a 14 to 16 team league sort of player. Dirk, not his best night, 14-4, but did have 4 steals out of nowhere. 4 of 17 shooting is not the best. On to the Nuggets. Bill Barton, 23-8, 5 triples and 2 assists. The good Bill Barton has returned. And if he's available, yeah, sure, add him, but don't get too attached. Emmanuel Mudiay also had a good night. He was 5 of 11 from the field in 35 minutes, going 16-6-7. And his ability to play better meant that DJ Augustine got limited to 17 minutes. Also, Jameer Nelson got, I don't know why he played 7 minutes. Those 7 minutes go to Augustine. We're looking at a much better performance. So Augustine can be moved on from. Again, you have to be brutal at this time of the year. So if there's someone else that you want, you move on from Augustine, because this is the risk with guys who are backups like that. And he had been pretty solid up until this game, but you know, stuff can go wrong, clearly. Ken Fareed was back. He started, played 22 minutes, went 9-11, and had a couple of blocks, while Yusuf Nurkic was out of this one with an illness. Now, Nurkic looked like a good pickup if Fareed was going to remain out, but even if Nurkic had a played, I'm not really thinking that he's going to be a standard league guy with Fareed back in business. Nikola Jokic played 24 minutes, 2-8-2 with 2 steals. He is struggling a little bit at the moment to produce. I still think he's a guy you want to hold, but by no means is it a crime to drop him. Gaz Harris, 30 minutes, 13 points, 2 triples. I do like Gaz a lot, obviously, but he's not a guy that has to be locked in and held as well. You could use his position as a streaming one as well. The Sacramento Kings and the Portland Trailblazers, the Kings rested because they're playing for so much. Rudy Gay, Marco Bellinelli, DeMarcus Cousins, and Rajon Rondo were all out of this one. Seth Curry started, played 33 minutes and went 21-4-1, 2 steals and 3 threes. Awesome, great, but will it happen again? Don't know, because when Rondo comes back and when Gay comes back, he's not going to have this many shots. But he showed at least that if he's given the opportunity, he can produce, and that's something to file away in your mind. Darren Collison had 10-2-7 with 3 steals, a good night from him. And Willie Cauley-Stein, 33 off the bench, 13-14 with a steal. I think you've got to add Cauley-Stein and see how this plays out. Kostas Koufos always remains an option when Cousins goes. 32 minutes, 10-7, 2 steals and a block. He'll always produce numbers when Cousins is out, and he'll do nothing when Cousins is in. Quincy Acey played 28 minutes, 10-4 with a triple one, so some odd production there. And Omri Caspi had 18-6-5 in his 30 minutes. Ben McLemore also played 26 and scored 3 points. His season has been brutal. Is it George Karl? Is it Ben McLemore? I'm going to wager that it's a little bit of both. The Portland Trailblazers, Alan Crabb out of nowhere for 21 points in 21 minutes with 3 threes, a steal, and a block. But the key factor is here, he was 8 of 10 from the field, and he is not someone I'm rushing to grab. Dame Lillard in 29 minutes, 13 points only, but 9 assists, 3 threes, steal and a block is good, and Al-Farouq Aminu had 14-8 with a steal and a block and 2 triples, so good numbers from those guys. Aminu is a solid back in 12-team league guy, where Ed Davis, another 9 rebounds, another 3 blocks, the premier big man stream option, or even a big man hold option if you just want points, sorry, if you want rebounds, blocks, and field goal percentage. There aren't many guys who are available who will be as good as what Davis is. CJ McCollum, 16-2-3, 4 triples and a steal, pretty nice numbers there. And Mo Harkless got another start and was productive, 12-3-2, a 3 and a block. The minutes are a little bit concerning at 23, so he's not a must-add 12-team league guy, but he's someone you have to pay attention to. In a 14-team league, you have to own him, whereas Mason Plumlee, back down to 20 minutes, 4-3-3, he can become expendable now if they're going to run that odd rotation and give Noah Vonleh 24 minutes of all people. Don't imagine that sticks, but Plumlee might be a streamable candidate. The last game of the night, the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Clippers. Avery Bradley had 13 points, but the 3 threes, the 3 steals, the block, that's where it all comes from in terms of his value. Isaiah Thomas had 24 points with not a lot else, and Marcus Smart went 13-5-4. So some decent numbers there. That's not enough for me to declare Smart a must-add guy. And Brad Stevens in his front court was at it again. Amir Johnson, 19 minutes. Jared Sullinger, 20 minutes. Tyler Zeller, 19 minutes. Kelly Olynyk, 23 minutes. Jonas Jerebko, 10 minutes. Impossible to own Johnson, Olynyk, Jerebko, and probably even Sullinger at this point, despite him going 9-11. You might have to move on from him. You don't have to, but you might have to consider it, maybe. Or maybe that's the better way of phrasing it. Jay Crowder looks like he's going to return soon, so Evan Turner's 4-4-1 is not a great way for him to go out. I still would just hold if necessary, but again, with Crowder likely to return, if you drop Turner to get someone else in, it's not going to be the end of the world. On to the Clippers. DeAndre Jordan, 15-13 with 3 blocks and a steal, and actually went 5-7 from the free throw line, so big night for him. Chrissy Paul in just 26 minutes, 13-4-14 with 3 steals, and Austin Rivers dropped 16 points in 30 minutes. The Clippers were able to spread their rotation out because they were up pretty big in this one. Paul Pierce suffered an ankle and a knee issue. It doesn't look great for him. It's not season ending, but he's unlikely to play a big part in the next week, it appears. We don't have an exact timetable on it just yet, but he looks like he will miss some time. Not that that's going to affect many fantasy leagues. With him out, the minutes will go to Wes Johnson. They'll go to Luke Marmute. Some more will go to Austin Rivers as well, and that's not really going to be a 12-team impact at all. Let's do Cole Aldrich watch. 14 minutes, 6.7 rebounds, 2 blocks. Freak, this guy. He just puts up numbers in such a limited time. And I said that Ed Davis is the cream of the crop for streaming rebounds and blocks. I forgot about my man Cole. I'd probably have Davis over Aldrich, but Aldrich just gets it done reliably in so few minutes, and it's pretty amazing. JJ Redick, 9 points in 18 minutes. And Jamal Crawford had 15, including 4 triples in 29. And he's a great stream option, Jamal, but not someone that is a must-hold player. That is those 10 games done from Monday. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to preview the 6 games for DFS on Tuesday.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus that you know, you can't see what I see.
Tuesday, and some very interesting things. So actually, some interesting things for season-long league guys as well, because the first game is the Brooklyn Nets and the Orlando Magic, and guess who's back in practice? Nikola Vucevic is back, and he is questionable for this game. So if you're in a season-long league, Nick Vucevic, I'd be looking to add him, because you know what, if he doesn't play Tuesday, then He doesn't play Tuesday. That's it. But the Magic play again Thursday, which is a low schedule game. So you might add him for Tuesday and he doesn't play. And you go, you know, that's a bummer. It's a pain in the ass. But holding on to him for Wednesday probably doesn't matter because you should have a full roster for Wednesday. And then you get him for Thursday. And that could be good. And then you have a Friday game and a Sunday game. Nick Vucevic, an ad of him now, could be sensational for your team. So make sure you have a look to see whether he's around. He might not play. He might not play the rest of this week. I would be shocked, but he's back in practice. He's ready to go. Let's look at this first game in more detail. Now, the Nets and the Magic. The first position we're looking at is point guards, and I like a couple of these blokes here. Shane Larkin is at 3,700. I think that despite the negative matchup against the Magic, I think you need to look at it because he's averaging 26 points across his last three. He had 25 fantasy points today with scoring 7 actual real points. And that's the sort of guy that does go under the radar because they're not scoring big points, but he chimes in his steals, he gives you some rebounds, he gives you some assists. At 3,700, can he get to 20 points? I would feel pretty confident about him getting to 20 points. I think he is almost a must play in tournaments and cash. Lord Alfred Payton on the other side. Now, his salary has risen by 300, but it's only up to 5,700. It's always a good idea to play the Nets, although Shane Larkin's a pretty good defender. But when you're averaging 37 across your last three, at 5,700, I'm okay with putting Lord Alfred in there until Skiles comes out and just bends me over this desk that I'm recording on and makes me look like an idiot. That might happen. Let's hope not, because Payton has been consistent since returning, but there is a massive risk with that Chrome Dome on the sidelines. Don Sloan, Brandon Jennings, CJ Watson, no intrigue there. Vic Oladipo has also rejoined practice. He seems probably more likely to go than Vucevic, but he is at 8,400. That is a lot. Now, we saw what Dwayne Wade as a shooting guard can do against the Nets today. Big night from him. 8,400, though, is pretty steep. And Oladipo is averaging just 27 points in his last three contests against the Nets. You obviously need him to go for more than that, but he's been in some red-hot form. Now, with Payton back, I'm a little bit cautious of him being able to get to 45 points, so I think I'll pass on Oladipo at that salary. 3,800 for Sean Kilpatrick. He does nothing but score, and even when he's scoring like today, only 15.6 points. Not worth looking at. Markel Brown, Wayne Ellington, same story. The small forwards, Evan Fournier, I like him here, 5,500. You feel there has to be a big game coming relatively soon. He's been a little bit down, but this is a great matchup for him here in this one. He's averaging only 21 across his last five, but I do think that this is a 25 at least sort of performance from Fournier. Bojan Bogdanovic at 5,000, he's a tournament-only option. Rondo Hollis-Jefferson, he's neither. And Sergei Karasev, I don't mind Karasev as a tournament at minimum salary. He has had a 32-point game in the last five, and it's not like the Nets have brought someone back who's going to be an awesome player who takes away all his shots. There is the ability for him to play 30 minutes and put up a big number. Power forwards, Aaron Gordon at 5,700. I feel much more confident in Lord Alfred than I do in Gordon getting consistent minutes, but he is averaging 30 across the last three. Pity it's only yielding him 25 fantasy points, so he's not an awesome option, but big men do play well against the Nets. At 5,700, for him to get to 28 or 29 points, it's not a massive stretch. So I do think that he is an option to use here, but probably in a tournament sort of setting. Thad Young bounced back, 42 points. He'd been really down lately. At 7,400, he's probably not the greatest option, but he's okay. And obviously, if Vucevic is out, Jason Smith at 4,000 had 26 points in the last game. You can feel okay with using him if Vucevic is out, but he's by no means a must-play guy. At center, Dwayne Dedmon, who excelled last time with Vucevic out, but we have to remember that was because he played the Bulls, and he dropped 35 points. He will not do that again, so I'm not looking at him, even though he's priced at a very interesting 3,900. Not interested. 8,000 for Nick Vucevic. I don't even know if he's playing, so no. While Brook Lopez at 8,100, I think that he is in a good spot. He should go for 40 against a Magic team who has been pretty lenient against opposition centers, and it's not like the return of Vucevic really stiffens up that defensive backline. The next game is the Charlotte Hornets and the Philadelphia 76ers. Let's start by looking at the point guard battle. The Sixers, if you look on Basketball Monster with all our what-if scenarios, there is 7 scenarios for the Sixers because 3 of their big men are questionable. Rishon Holmes, Jeremy Grant, and Nerlens Noel. I doubt that Holmes plays. He's dealing with that Achilles problem. Jeremy Grant is dealing with a bruised quad. And Nerlens Noel is dealing with a bruised knee. We might see those guys. I will be shocked if we see Rishaun Holmes play. Let's look at the point guards. Kemba Walker's had his salary dropped to $7,800. This is a pretty decent matchup. It's more than a decent matchup. It's a bloody good matchup. He's averaging 37 in his last three games against the Sixers. He's been a little bit down from that in his last five, averaging just 27. But this looks like it could be an opportunity for him to push 40. So I don't hate using Kemba. Ish Smith's been playing big minutes and big production. But I think if Nerlens Noel returns, he won't have to take on quite as much responsibility, and they won't play as many two-point guard sets, which they were doing with him and McConnell, or McConnell and Marshall, which enabled these guys to play more minutes. Smith at 6,800, he's averaging 38 across his last three, but you'd have to think he gets 35 for him to really, you know, push home some value. You know, it's not a terrible matchup, so I can understand using him, but I'm not over the moon about it. Isaiah Cannon, TJ McConnell, nah. Shooting guards. Courtney Lee has been putting together some decent numbers. 26 points in the last one. He's at 4,100. He's averaging 22 across his last five. Not like it's tough against the Sixers. He is just risky. I just don't see the upside in using Courtney Lee. Jeremy Lin, though, I do like. He's at 4,200. We might see a situation where the Hornets blow out the Sixers and Lin plays 28, 29 minutes. We've seen that a couple of times recently where he dropped that 40-point game and just within the last five games. He had 26 in the last one in just 25 minutes. He's averaging almost a point per minute across his last five games. He's got an average against the Sixers in his last three of 26 points in only 26 minutes. So I think that he is definitely someone you can have a look at and feel pretty okay about using it at only 4,200. Nick Stauskas, nah, don't really think so. Small forwards. Nick Batum is at 7,800. He had 47 in his last game. He's a 36 average across his last five. I feel relatively confident about getting Batum out there. You should get a fantasy point per minute out of him. If he plays 35 minutes, that's 35 points, and he definitely has the 40-point upside easy. So, yes, I like him. Bob Cove, he's at 6,100. He's a 31 guy across the last three games. He's 30 across his last five. And that makes you feel like he's going to get 30. I just feel that 30 is what he's going to get, and that's great, but there's no real high tournament upside there. He's just going to get 31 points, and that's sort of where he's going to sit. So that's okay, but you're fine in a cash game, you bang on 5x, but that's sort of where it sits to me. Power forwards, Marvin Williams had a big one. 37 points in his last game. He's at 5,700, but before that, he'd really struggled. Now, it's a great matchup, so he's definitely in play at 5,700. Cody Zeller at 44. There's not many cheap power forwards that are out there, to be honest, so Zeller has an opportunity as well in this game. It's going to come down to fouls, but if, say, Noel is out and say, Grant is out, then he is going to have an opportunity down low against Christian Wood, against Carl Landry, against Elton Brand to really put up a big performance, block some shots, grab some boards. I think at 4,400, he remains a real cheap punt option at power forward. Jeremy Grant, if he plays, not that keen at 48. Nerlens Noel hasn't played for the last three. He's at 67. Not going to use him coming back. And Rishaun Holmes, yeah, he won't play, I don't think. If all those guys are out, Carl Landry at 4,700 has to be looked at. He's averaging 26 across his last three, dropped 36 in that game against the Warriors. And if those three guys are out, you should, you know, hopefully get yourself to 30 points with Carl Landry. That would be what you'd be looking at, and I think that you can achieve it. At center, Elk Jefferson, 4,900. Not for me. And Spencer Hawes, he's not playing either. The Chicago Bulls and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 7 points. The total is 203 in this one. No injuries to really talk about too much. Georgie Hill, he gets a Bulls bump here. He's at 5,200, and he's not someone I'd often recommend, but he is averaging 24 across his last five. In his last three against the Bulls, he's at 27. And recently, the Bulls are a real bonus. He is at a salary drop of 200. He could be a 30-point guy here, so I think that George Hill you have to look at in tournaments. Aaron Brooks, he was good today, but I'm not trusting that. And Derrick Rose is at 68. It's just too expensive for me. He's averaging 30, and if he's averaging 30, I want him to be priced at 6,000. And he's not, and he's just continually overpriced. Shooting guard. Speaking of overpriced, Jim Butler at 8,000. It's a horrible matchup. He has been horrible. He is not someone I'm investing in. He's averaging just 30 points across his last five, which is, you know, a $6,000 player, not an $8,000 player. Monte Ellis is at 6,800. A big game in the last one for him, but prior to that, he'd been subpar. Now, he's got another opportunity for a big game because, again, he is playing the Bulls. So he has an opportunity, but he's probably just a tournament option. Rod Stuckey, Solomon Hill, Justin Holiday, they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel if you're using those guys. Small forwards, I'll say it again, you can actually probably repeat it. Paul George is playing the Bulls, so he's priced at 8,700. Does he get to 40 points? I reckon you have to be pretty confident in it. He's averaging 39 across his last five already. This is a nice spot for him. 40, 45 points should be within the realms of possibility for Georgie. Mike Dunleavy, he's getting minutes in the mid-20s, but he's not doing anything points-wise in the mid-20s, so he can be left alone. Same with CJ Miles. And Nikola Mirotic is an ultimate punt option, but that's literally it, and it wouldn't even be in my main GPP lineup. Dougie McDermott, he can be left alone. Power forwards, Miles Turner. He last time he had a good matchup, which was against the Rockets, he was terrible. He had 8 points. He has another great matchup here. He's at 5,700. It's obviously a bit hard to trust him in a cash game, but it's hard to go past him for a tournament and hope that something comes off. There's a chance here. Taj Gibson at 5,200. Yeah, I think that Taj is okay. He's solid, but it's not easy as a big man playing the Pacers. They do get limited by those big bodies, Turner and Mihinmi, so he's not a guy that I'm interested in. Bob Portis, Lavoie Allen. Nah, they need an injury to really come into relevance. At center, I do like Mihinmi, though. He's at 5,100. He's averaging 25 across the last five, 28 across the last three, 27 against his last three against Chicago. And at 5,100, I'll take that. That feels really good cash value and pretty solid tournament upside with the way he's playing offensively as well. Powell at 8,600. He almost cracked 40 today. And 8,600 is a lot better than the 9,000 that you were paying for him a little bit earlier in the season. I'm still not sure that I want to use him against the Pacers at 8,600 on a back-to-back with a sore knee. That's just, there's something that's sticking against me. Jordan Hill's an interesting one. He's at 3,500. The last three games he's played the Bulls, he's averaged 34 fantasy points. It has been in 33 minutes, so he's played big roles against the Bulls. But could he have a big game? This is completely going out on a limb, but at 3,500, he would have zero ownership, Jordan Hill. I reckon you might get, you could get 25 points out of him, even in a backup role. So he could be worth a look. Just he has destroyed the Bulls. Destroyed them. The Thunder and the Pistons is the next game. The Thunder are favored by 2.5 points. The total is 216. In this one, let's look at the point guards first. Reg Jackson is at 6,000. He doesn't really look like he's coming close to touching 30 points. It's a good matchup, but I won't be using him. Although, revenge, former team, Westbrook defense, tournament. I think you look at him in a tournament. When I say I won't use him in cash, but in a tournament, he could really have a big one. But he's struggling to do anything at the moment. So it's not like he can just flip a switch and go, you know what? Oh, here it is, big game coming. Because I would assume he would have wanted to do that over the last 2 months where he's been really struggling. So yes, everything looks like it's adding up for him, but maybe it doesn't. Russ Westbrook, another triple-double, another 56 fantasy points today. He's at 10,600. You feel relatively confident you're going to get 50 from Russ on most nights. Although, the last three times he's played the Pistons, he is averaging 29 fantasy points. That is a bit of a red flag, and they are quite good at defending opposition point guards. So, if I'm spending 10,000 on a point guard, Russ looks great, but he's not going to be my option. There is another guy that's playing in the last game of the night that I'd be a little bit more confident about. Campaign, Steve Blake, Lorenzo Brown, Spencer Dinwiddie. There's no value in any of those guys, clearly. Shooting guards, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is at 5,600. A bit of a drop-off in the last game, but he'd been pretty good prior to that. He is an okay option, but not great. Dion Waiters at 3,600. I think he's a pretty good tournament play. 28 in today's game. He's had a 29-point game as well. He's also had a negative 2 game in the last five, so that's not ideal. But the last two games, he's started to push up and started to look a little bit better. So he's a name to consider. Randy Foy, Andre Robertson, Darren Hilliard, Anthony Morrow, we don't need to look at them. Kev Durant, 10,300. fine. He's an awesome play. 59 today. He's averaging 49 across the last five. Not sure that Marcus Morris is going to be able to stop him. So, yeah, fine with KD. Speaking of Marcus Morris at 5,500, you feel like you'll get 25 or 26 out of Morris, which is okay at that 5X value line, but it's not superb. Stan Johnson, no. Kyle Singler, revenge game? Yeah. Reggie Bullock, no thanks either. Toby Harris at power forward, he's at 6,300. So that salary's risen by 200, and that's making him less appealing to me. It is a good matchup against Ibaka, but 6,300 makes me want to just sit it out, I think. Speaking of Ibaka, he's at 5,400. That's 900 less. He's averaging 29 points across his last three. I'd be actually okay with using Serge here. Again, there is always a risk, but he's averaging 32 the last three times he's played the Pistons. I think that he is a decent risk to use. At center, Enes Kanter, does he bounce back after a disappointing night? He's priced at 5,600. He's an okay option, but to me, his ceiling is just not that high, but he's not a terrible cash game center. Andre Drummond, it's a bad matchup for centers going up against Steve Adams. 8,200 for Drummond. He's averaging 45 across his last three, but his last three against the Thunder have yielded 31 points. That's someone I'll steer clear of. Steve Adams at 44. I don't mind Steve Adams at 44. I think he's an okay guy, but I reckon you can probably do better. Bainesy, probably not. The Houston Rockets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron is out of this game. He is resting. At least we got some advance notice. Iman Shumpert is also questionable. He did not practice. So it makes things interesting. Now, without LeBron, you'd probably look at Kyrie and go, ooh, Kyrie, no LeBron, 7,000. Is he worth looking at? The last three games he's played Houston, he's averaged 37 points. That's another tick in Kyrie's box. The guy opposite him is a real problem. Patrick Beverley is a real issue. So, yeah, I'd put Kyrie into a tournament, but I have no trust at all in a cash game when you're playing against Pat Bev, because Beverley can just piss guys off and get in their head and really affect them. And Irving hasn't been, he's averaging 25 across his last five anyway, so he hasn't been firing. So he's going to need to fire and beat Beverley. And look, the no LeBron will help, but I'm not confident. Speaking of Beverley, 4,800 just feels a little bit rich despite going against Kyrie. Dellavedova, he'll get a bump if Shumpert's out, but probably not enough to consider for DFS. At shooting guard, Jim Harden, let's just lock him in. 11,000, 55 points, bang, it's pretty much going to happen. Shumpert, minimum salary for Iman. If LeBron's out, and if Shumpert plays, which is a bit of an if, I think he's a tournament guy to look at because he should get some big minutes. J.R. Smith at 43 is also a tournament play with LeBron now because he'll get more shots and more ability to handle the ball, which he's a pretty good passer. So he'll be able to get some numbers there too. So if with Shumpert, obviously it depends if he plays, but Smith remains a tournament play. At small forward, Richard Jefferson has been a guy who's been getting a lot of LeBron's minutes when he's sat. He's at minimum salary. It's a great Rockets bump. Love him in a tournament. I think that he could go for 30 here, and that's not stupid. He'd had a 28-point game in his last five. Trevor Reeser at 5,400. He has played well against Cleveland, averaging 26 across his last three, but just not doing it for me at the moment. Mick Beasley at 49. I probably wouldn't use him at 49. Brewer, KJ McDaniels, no interest. The one I do like here is when we go to the power forwards, and we look at Kevin Love, who's at 6,900. He had 45 in his last game. He's averaging 40 across his last three. His salary it's not even at 7,000. Plus, you've got a Rockets bump. No LeBron means 35 should be pretty simple for Love to get in this one. Tristan Thompson, does he take advantage of the Rockets bump? Well, he would if he got to 30 minutes, but we have no trust in him getting to 30 with Fry getting 18 and Mozgov getting 20 plus every game now. It's hard to trust Thompson, so I probably would leave him out of it. Same with Fry at minimum salary, and obviously the Houston big man, Monty Unis, Capella, Harold, Jones, and Smith are not DFS options. At centers, this might seem blasphemous, but Tim Mozgov at 3,500, I think that he's an okay guy to look at. A, he's going to play 20-plus minutes, which he has the last four or five games. B, he's playing against the Rockets, which is great for opposition centers. C, there's no LeBron, so maybe he gets a few more touches inside. You don't imagine you're going to have a pretty big ownership on Mozgov, but I think in a tournament, at minimum salary, 24 points, is it crazy? 24 points at minimum salary, what's that, 6.5, 7x? It's pretty good value, and it might not pay off, But I think that it's a nice contrarian guy to save some money and, you know, load up on guys like Steph and like KD in the other positions. Dwight Howard, not touching the ball. He's at $6,800, though. That salary is real, real cheap. The last three times he's played the Cavs, he's got 38 points. It's a shit matchup, though. Centers really struggle against Cleveland, so he's not really someone I'm heavily considering. The last game of the night is the Wizards and the Warriors. The last time John Wall and Steph Curry faced off, they just went absolutely nuts on each other, so I think that both of them are great here. Steph at 10,500. I feel pretty confident of him getting 50 points in a game that hopefully the Wizards can keep sort of close and he can stay in the game, but I think that he's a great option. 9,700 for Johnny Wall. He's going to be playing balls out as well. So I think that 9,700, he is an option for 50 points also. So both of these guys are in play to me. Sean Livingston should play after missing the last game, but that doesn't mean we want to use him in DFS. Klay Thompson has been on fire. Don't really think that the Wizards are going to be able to do a massive amount to shut him down at only 7,400. He's averaging 44 across his last three. Now, he hasn't been great against the Wizards in the past, but he's only averaging 25 in 28 minutes in those last three games. He's getting more minutes than that now, and he's a better player than that now. So I think that 35 points is a bare minimum for Clay here. Brad Beal, tough to use him, but it's a good matchup. He's at 5,700. It's just real tough, and I don't think I would bother using him. Barbosa, Rush, Thornton, Temple, Clark, none of those guys are guys you should be interested in. Small forward, Harry Barnes, he's literally terrible. 4,200 for him, it's not worth it. 5,500 for Otto Porter, yeah, you know what, not a bad guy to look at. 25 points is not out of the question. He can go for 30, so he's a tournament play. That's probably about it. The power forwards, Draymond. I do like Draymond here. He is always risky in a cash game format because he can have the ups and the downs, but he's at 8,500. He's averaging 43 across his last five. 40 points feels like he should be able to get that relatively comfortably. It's not an exorbitant price, 8,500. It's obviously not cheap, though. Markieff Morris should play. He's at 4,900. And I can get behind using Markieff. He's averaging 29 across the last three against the Warriors, albeit in different uniforms. But I think that, you know, you just need him to get to 25 points. I think that he can get to that. If Markieff is out, Nene at 4,000 is interesting but not spectacular. And Mo Spates dropped a 28-point game in the last one. He's at 4,000, but not, yeah, I think the chances of that happening are pretty low. Let's look at the centers. I'm pretty sure we're not going to be using Andy Bogut at 4,300, but Marcin Gortat at 6,600. Their salary has risen, so that's a little bit of a concern. But with a 36-point average across his last three, 33 across his last five, he is in play. And the Warriors do allow big man to put up some pretty decent numbers, so he's not someone to shy away from. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day now. Point guard, Shane Larkin, 37. Lord Alfred Payton, 57. And Steph Curry, 10,500. Shooting guard, Jeremy Lin, 42. Klay Thompson, 74. And Jim Harden, 11,000. The small forwards, I don't really like any of the low-priced guys there. Evan Fournier at 55, Paul George at 87. Power forwards, Cody Zeller, 44, Kev Love, 69, and Draymond at 85. And the centers, Tim Mozgov, 35, Jan Mahinmi, 51, and Brooke Lopez, 8,100. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Hopefully you guys are still listening, still going in your seasonal leagues. Hopefully you're still grinding away at the DFS action and trying to get some cash into your accounts, which I'm sure you're doing because I know you're all brilliant basketball minds. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at redrock_bball and tweet at me any questions you may have. Of course, Basketball Monster is up to date with all of the fantasy news and all of the late scratches and injuries and all that sort of bullshit that's happening at the moment with rests and ridiculous injuries that seem to be going on. So make sure you're following Basketball Monster for all of that. I had a couple of people tweeting me questions now. Oh, now that I'm out of a dynasty, which players do I look to grab? And that sort of thing is a fine question, but I need a shitload more information. I can't just go, you know what, grab Joe Young, because your league, your dynasty league might have 180 players deep. Your dynasty league might go 300 players deep. Give me an idea of who's around. Give me a snapshot of your waiver wire. But I am going to be doing definitely some more dynasty league stuff when the regular season wraps up, and I can really look in and go, you know what, these are guys who are really looking forward for a bump. It's obviously a very early look ahead, and with the draft and free agency, we'll be reviewing and re-going over that sort of stuff. But that's the sort of thing I'll be covering in all the team review podcasts, and there'll probably be one small podcast before we get into that as well. just really focusing on maybe 2-3, maybe 5 guys who I think are primed for a bit of a breakout at this extraordinarily early stage. We're done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.